I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and here we are on the America Out Loud Radio Network. As always, I'm thrilled to be here. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for tuning in. You know, it's a great honor to be able to have a voice, especially in this day and age when we have so much going on in our country. There are things that happen every minute. I want to go through the news headlines and talk a little bit about some things that are going on. And with me today, I'm going to have Miss Kathy Pangaro here, the Mrs. Lieutenant Joe here, who always has exciting opinions and things to talk about. And I'm not just saying that because I have to. I'm saying it because I really mean it. Kathy, how are you?
Hello, Joe.
Okay. So when I'm looking out there and I'm looking at the headlines, see what's going on, we know that you think about all the strife that's going on in our country, and you think about the animosity between people, and then we have COVID on top of it, and it's really quite a mess. There was an incident the other day at the White House where the president was giving a briefing, and in the middle of the briefing, the Secret Service guys come in and shuttle him out of there because apparently there was a shooting in front of the White House. And what we've come to hear so far is that some guy, 51-year-old guy, walked up to a Secret Service person, told them they had a weapon, and then apparently jumped into a shooting position, you know, crouched down like he was going to shoot, and the officer fired on him and hit him. You know, you don't do that. You don't tell the police you got a gun and then point like you're going to shoot, especially in front of the White House.
That is mental illness for sure. Right?
It could be suicide by cop. There's a lot of opportunity where people, you know, they might be suicidal and they want to die, and they're just afraid to do it themselves. So they put police in that position to shoot them. That kind of happens. I just found it interesting that at the White House, you never know. I mean, you've been to the White House. If you haven't been there, you have to see it's in the middle of the neighborhoods. It's right. You can walk right up to the fence where you're not very far away from the Oval Office and where you're not far away from the living quarters. Somebody with a gun could shoot there. Now, of course, they have bulletproof windows and they have all kinds of other stuff to protect the occupants. But, you know, a couple of years ago, we had a guy jump the fence and made it to the front door. Now, the front door is not locked. It's not like our house because you got Secret Service. But they tackled the guy at the front door trying to go in, and he had a knife on him. When we look at these instances, having been there, I was standing in the front one day with my daughter. We were on a trip down there, and all of a sudden, these poles come up out of the ground, and there's Secret Service agents outside, and here comes the limousines, and it was the president coming home. And it's like he's right there on the street, so I understand that their nervousness about that, but it's just strange. You think in a day of a terror incident that the president's right there. Maybe it's time we start to consider moving the official government location to a place in the hills of Virginia where it can be properly protected, as opposed to a house in the middle of Washington, D.C. Having been inside when my son worked there, Kathy, you saw it. You could see the layers of paint. You know, the building's over 100 years old, and even though they've reinforced it and it's got modern technology in there, obviously, it's still just an old 100-year-old house sitting there. Maybe with these kind of things, this is a warning to us, because the world is not what it used to be. It is a lot more dangerous. We see crime in the streets everywhere now. Is it too much to think that somebody could do something really desperate right there at the White House? And that's just what that reminded me of.
It's so funny because when we were young, we saw the attack on President Reagan. And you saw the attack on President Kennedy, right? It was inconscionable to think that somebody would actually go through that kind of thing. But now, this day and age, you feel like it's going to happen at any turn.
Sure, especially with the animosity towards this president.
The violence right now, the lawlessness right now, you took people who may never have done such a thing and you've amped them up, that they're
yes,
ready to go. We've amped these people up. Somebody out there, I want to say it's evil itself, somebody out there wants lawlessness. It wants violence, right? Because that creates fear and division and all of those things. And you could see this is a country full of fearful people.
No doubt. And you're right that they're, you know, who's the they? Everyone talks about they behind the scenes. Well, the reality is, I think there are a they behind the scenes. That what we failed to understand, and I don't mean to preach at anyone, but I'm saying when you look at things from an investigator's point of view, there's always a reason that something happens. People do create plots. You know, I'm not a conspiracy person, but most of the best known crimes, the big crimes, are planned out. You know, a terrorist attack is planned out very meticulously. People do surveillance to just see how the officials come and go, to see the security in the area, to try and figure out where is the weak point. Well, in real crime, what you're talking about here in the change in our country, this is actually part of a plan from a political ideology. You know, when things are going really well and everyone feels safe and there's a great economy going on, the idea of slipping over into socialism is something that would seem unconscionable. You would never even consider that.
Never. Not. I mean, just think. 8 months ago, we had no thought soever that this would be happening to our country.
Right. A short 8 months ago was a different world.
Right. Right. And now you can see that maybe there's something there. I don't understand why people are doing it. I don't understand the whole chess play. I feel like I'm a chess piece and all these. I don't understand it. But I have to recognize something's amiss. There's something. You know, it's above my pay grade to really understand a conspiracy of this magnitude, but something's wrong.
It is, and in all great political movements, whether they're to the right or the left, fascism, whether it's socialism, or even our republic, was something that was plotted out. It's based on an ideology. So when we look now, read the Communist Manifesto. They wrote this stuff down to tell you how to change from the kind of government you have to one that is more totalitarian, one that is more state-controlled. This is not a mystery. These people don't just bumble through life and end up one day being a dictator or one day having a socialist government. That is a planned-out response, just as we planned, I talk our founding fathers, planned to overthrow the rule of the king, who was a tyrant. He's a leader. He's a single individual, and we wanted a republic. Well, we had to plan that out. We had armies. We had plans. We had smart people figuring out how to attack, when to attack, and what to do.
Yeah, it kind of sounded, I guess when I was back in the day in school learning about all this stuff, what is it, fourth grade, fifth grade, all of that, I was thinking, oh, it was kind of like a natural rebellion. But it really was orchestrated. You can't just have grassroots and pitchforks, right? Going up against the greatest country in the world at the time, which was England.
Right, the most powerful country on earth.
Right, but now you look back and you say, yeah, there was a lot more orchestration to it. It does feel, whatever's happening right now, it feels very orchestrated. I have no comprehension of the magnitude behind this power play.
Right.
I can't believe it.
And most people can't. See, and that's the thing. Something that seems so not normal. You know, we don't sit around and think about plotting the overthrow of our government, but there are people that have been laying in wait for years that are ideological, who have been waiting for the moment, and it's been building over the years. As America has gone from two parties, basically, that were going down the same road, just had different ways to get there, now we've come to two different parties that are going in complete opposite directions of what we want. The rise of AOC, the rise of Tlaib, the rise of the Squad, the rise of Bernie Sanders, who is an avowed socialist, who was almost the nominee of the Democrat Party. To see that reality is to say, okay, we have to think a little deeper in this. This is not pitchforks out in the street and that's going to change. This is an actual plan that people have to switch our government, get rid of capitalism. They're open about it now. You can see people on any one of the news shows today talking about, well, capitalism is actually bad. We need to go to a more socialist, and they're serious. They have plans. Where these things do start, the pitchforks that you talk about, every movement starts with an idea, whether it starts in somebody's basement, where they start, so, you know, I'm sick and tired of this. And then someone else says, and that starts to grow. That's how our government grew. People got tired of living under the yoke of the king. And they started to talk about it and think what they could do. And then somebody came up with an idea. Let's get rid of them. And that grew.
The Tea Party was that way. I remember the Tea Party when it first came out. I remember us sitting around with neighbors and friends. We had a little meeting here, like a makeshift meeting, when Obama wanted to change our health care, right? And that was, we were aghast. We couldn't believe that this was happening right under our nose. Pass this bill. We'll read it after you pass it. We couldn't believe it. And the tea party. And I remember they had a tea party thing not near us. Mm-hmm. And we took the kids out there. And we went. It was the summertime. And the big bus came.
Yes.
Right? And the singing. And at that tea party, you had the elderly. You had these World War II vets coming through. They were standing there. You had the Vietnam vets. You had people in wheelchairs, right? We had our kids there. I think our kids were probably like 8 and 12 at the time, something like that, maybe 8 and 11. And they were mesmerized. There was patriotic singing. There was
flags.
Clapping and cheering. Hundreds and hundreds of people. And it felt very grassrooty.
It did. It absolutely felt. And it was grassrooty. You know, it was an amazing moment because Obama was really the first. I want to go socialist with you, and really had an opportunity to take away 1/6 of our economy and socialize it in healthcare, and he actually did it. And that's what scared everybody so much. And then the running up of the deficits, which was really the essence of the Tea Party. Hey, you're spending us blind, which we don't even talk about anymore. Both parties want to spend us blind now as though it doesn't really matter. But that Tea Party thing was really, that was an amazing thing to be a part of. But that was a grassroots.
And it was organic. Yes. Like there was nobody around. It was just the people rising up. It felt wonderful to be part of it. There was something to do. Yes. Now I was, you know, something I want to talk to you about today, and we'll talk about it later. But now what is there we can do? Well, we had Trump last election, and we were holding our breath that he would win. It was an amazing thing. We were just really, here's somebody that could get us out of this hole, right? And change the course of our country. It's one of those big old battleships, you know, and they want to change course. It takes so long.
Right, it's not easy.
It's, you don't just turn the wheel and it goes, right? It's going to take a long time to take this ship of the United States back on course where we want it.
Right.
And who knows if it'll even stay on course. But what do the people, what do the grassroots people do as we're seeing this lawlessness against us? And I am telling you, I have a bunch of women friends and male friends that are not political. And everybody feels it. There's something wrong. Mm-hmm. I heard a podcast the other day that said it was great and was actually a couple of priests talking. And they said, there is no way that this country shut down so quick wasn't orchestrated beforehand. They said, you can't change a whole country and shut it down in 2 weeks like that unless you had these things kind of planned out ahead of time.
Laying in wait.
So somebody had things laying in wait, and we're just not realizing it. We were just innocent, right? We're going, okay, we'll take 2 weeks. Everybody gets a vacation. How cool is that? We'll do some puzzles. Never realizing that this orchestration was there, but everybody feels it. Right. I don't care what level of...
And you're absolutely right. And that's one of the things that I think the silent majority that's out here, people can understand, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter movement, you can't argue with the theme behind it. And that's where they're brilliant. The left is brilliant. They come up with something that, how can you argue with it? Do you want to see black people killed in the street? I do not.
No.
Nobody does. We're all Americans now. We need to really come together. But what a great slogan. But what's behind that? And this is when I get frustrated talking to people, because like you say, there had to be some kind of orchestration to make this happen so quickly. Well, I think what you have is, and I'm going to give Rush Limbaugh credits for this. Rush pointed this out a while ago. What he said was, these people don't have meetings. Like, Governor Murphy is not talking to the governor in California, and they're not meeting with, you know, Soros and, how are we going to shut the country down? But they all kind of believe that to stop Trump, to go to the next level, to change capitalism to socialism, we need to have an event. Mark Levin, the great Mark Levin, he calls them pseudo-events. They're made-up events to move to the next level. Because they all kind of believe that kind of thing, they're not meeting and talking about it. They're just all looking for it their own. And then something happens, and they jump on board, and they're ready to go. That's why you have the blue state, red state, shut down or not shut down.
Well, maybe Murphy's not talking to the governor of Wisconsin, but there's somebody orchestrating something.
Oh, they're talking now, right? Now that this has been going on.
They had things laying in wait.
Yes.
So what was it, George, what's his name that died?
George Floyd.
Floyd. I was thinking of anything. Anyway, George Floyd. That incident, egregious for sure. We don't want the truth behind it. Nobody really wants the truth behind it. We just took that as a message that black people are being killed in the streets. They're being killed by police officers all the time. Whatever the message is, but it was an inciting violence to take over. I cannot get over the amount of violence.
Yes, and that's one of the things I wanted to equate here. In the mentality of the mob, you know, one of the things that we saw in the beginning in Minneapolis, people were outraged, rightly so, to watch someone kneel on someone's neck until they died. I mean, it doesn't matter who it was, but I could understand that community being so upset with the beliefs that they have that this is happening every single minute and every day. And we all know it's not. Cops are not out there killing African-American people every single day, wantonly murder. That's not true. But that's the narrative that's been built in, baked into the pie. The media feeds it. The politicians feed it. The violence that started there, the protest, the outrage into the street because of what people saw, you can almost get that. They were so outraged that this happened. And maybe they have experiences we don't dealing with the police, and this just boiled over. What happens, though, is that's the event. That's the pseudo event. Horrible for George Floyd. Horrible for his family. Horrible for the people of Minneapolis and America. But it was an event that could be triggered. Now you have the mob. Now, the mentality of the mob is kind of like the pitchfork people. Normal people who would never do the wrong thing get involved emotionally in an event. Mobs get together, they go out, and for whatever reason, they start and they're angry. What we saw in Minneapolis was the umbrella man. Right? This was a guy dressed in all dark clothing, walking with an umbrella, and the crowd was seething around, but there was no violence yet. There was no looting going on yet. They were screaming, hollering, waving banners. People were doing what they should do when they're upset, go out and protest. Then the umbrella man came along with a hammer and started smashing glass in store windows. And what happens with the mentality of mob, that is like that's a flashpoint. That's the fuse, because you're all standing around and everybody's upset. They're getting more amped up from each other. That's how a mob moves. Normal people do things they would never normally do on their own. But in a mob, they start to move in one direction. Now here comes a guy smashing windows. And somebody says, hey, he's smashing windows. I'm going to smash windows because that's what we're doing now, right? The whole mob starts to move that way.
Oh, come on. But then they went in and they smashed windows in Rolex.
And you you watched the video and you saw somebody, the glass was smashed, and they just peeked in the store. Then someone else peeked in. Then somebody said, hey, there's no cops around. I'm going in, and they took something. And then the rest of the crowd says, hey, we can all. Now they smash all the windows and goes in because nobody's stopping. And that's not any particular people. That's a mob. That's how mobs do horrible, terrible things. What we have now is mobs out in the street that are being allowed to continue to do these things. And that shows other places. Hey, we have stuff. Chicago recently had 20 or 25 carloads of people pull into the downtown where all the expensive stores are. Nobody was protesting anything. This was an opportunity. They all jumped out, smashed the windows, and looted the entire place, the Rolex place, the Tesla car place, because people are learning from watching in other places in these blue states, nobody's stopping you. You go out and do that, you're going to come away with 5 Rolexes and maybe a brand new car or something. No one is going to stop you, and no one is going to hold you to account. It's a bigger mob mentality, which unfortunately, when it gets down to places where people are not expecting that, is you're going to see the violence. So listen, this is, I'm glad you're here, Kathy. There's a lot for us to talk about. We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice here on Round 2. Ding, 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 ding. With me is my bride, my best friend, Miss Kathleen Pangaro, and we are continuing our conversation, our dive into the events going on in our country that seem as though there's something else going on. Everybody feels it. We all see it. We see violence in the street that we're not used to. We were just talking in the last segment about what happened in Chicago. And that was, for me, as an investigator, I'm watching this progress. And as the mob, the idea of the mob is now moving out. What does that have to do with showing up 25 carloads of people to specifically loot and rob stuff out of stores? It has to do with protesting anything in the country.
It's not our Tea Party that we went to, right?
It has nothing to do with it. It's not the Tea Party. It is a criminal action that people are seeing an opportunity. People act on opportunity. They have an opportunity to do something. Hey, it's working over there. We might as well get ours too. And now you're seeing that mob mentality spread. What's going to happen when that mob decides they're going to come to the suburban areas and go, hey, there's malls filled with things. Let's go there and take them.
Well, I think it feels like they're punishing us. I feel like they're trying to punish somebody. That's the whole idea. Why would you go in there, I guess to steal, right, and cause mayhem? But why are you doing that? It feels like they're trying to punish us, number one. And number two, I want to bring up the gun sales in New Jersey have gone through the roof, the applications for guns.
Right.
I think regular people are starting to say the police and the government is not prepared to protect us.
They're not. We see, because when you see it, and your point earlier to say that you're talking to your friends that are not political and they see the danger. Like, you can't go to New York City.
Oh, no.
Would you go to New York City right now and go to dinner? I mean, even if you could find outdoor, you could be robbed. Minneapolis, actually, the police department put out a saying, a poster in the newspapers, and they're telling the people of Minneapolis, this is coming from the police department, we can't help you with what's going on. If you get robbed, be prepared. Be prepared to give up your watch. Be prepared to give up your wallet. Be prepared to give up anything you have. Don't fight with the robber. And try and remember what they looked like and then make the report. Don't do anything to upset them. This is the police telling you this. Just give in and give them your stuff. That's going to become the norm because you can't go to New York right now, place that you and I like to go. We can't go there for dinner. You know, I'm lucky I get to be armed as a former police officer. The rest of the world is not armed. So, and even then, do I want to go to New York and shoot somebody because they want to rob us?
Of course not. For dinner. I'm just not going to go. It's got to hurt our country in another way. So you kind of look, do you ever see that game where the weasel popped out and you had to punch his head, right?
Yeah. Or whack-a-mole.
Whack-a-mole. Well, I kind of feel like that. We try to get one thing settled and they boil something else up over here, right? And
yes,
we have all of these things boiling to show the country's in destruction. We need a better leader. And not that Joe Biden's it, but how are they going to make Joe Biden look like it? But I feel like there's something orchestrated.
And that's where all this leads. Right, wrong, or indifferent. This is a bigger political movement that's been growing. We've seen young people. When you see Bernie Sanders come out an avowed socialist and he runs, he almost gets the nomination of the Democrat Party. They cheated him out of it, but he could have won it. When we see Barack Obama, who came out and wanted to socialize the country, wanted to transform America. When we see now the Squad and all of these outwardly socialist people demanding socialism, demanding we throw away our history, tearing down statues. All of this is part of a bigger thing that's not happened only here in America. You can go back and look in historical times, anytime a change of government took place, an ideological change, this is what you see. Rip down symbols of the past, destroy that, burn, loot, go after people. You're saying it seems like punishment. That's what they did. They go after people that now they're going to teach you a lesson and now we're in charge. The other day, I saw an elderly woman. It was in a suburb outside. I don't know if it was Portland, but a big contingent of people showed up to do damage to the local police station. This elderly woman is standing out front. Hey, you can't do this. They threw paint on her, and somebody in the background screamed, "It's not your world anymore. It's our world." All right. Mm. If that is not the biggest signal, now that's growing. It's growing. You can't go to New York. You can't go to Chicago. And I was in Chicago a year ago, and I was the first time I was there other than landing and taking off. I stayed in the city. I thought it was beautiful. I had never enjoyed it like that, and I got to see the restaurants and the area. It was great. You can't go there now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go there. You can't go to Los Angeles because you'll get robbed. You'll get beaten because it's not about teaching us something. It's about changing. And how do you do that? What changes is you have to have all of this chaos. That's what I'm telling you. You can look this up, the Communist Manifesto. There's lots of left-wing writers that Obama is a fan of, that Hillary was a fan of, that will tell you specifically, you got to have all this chaos and all this craziness going on so that you need someone to step in and fix it. Now,
so people, the regular people are overwhelmed.
They're overwhelmed.
Because that's how I feel.
Yes.
I feel overwhelmed, like there's nothing I can do here. I feel very overwhelmed. I'm letting this play out in the name of progressivism or something. You know, it's playing out. And I'm scared to death. There's nothing we can do.
Right. And that's part of it. What can you do? Okay. What can you do as an individual to stop this? Can you stop rioting in New York?
No.
You have a voice other than we have a voice here in America Out Loud, but we all have to speak and we can't. We're not organized. We're not prepared for this. And that's what's happening. So one of the other things I see is that you were right. You have COVID-19, which was one thing. Then you had George Floyd. That all conflated together. It's an opportunity. We're not used to thinking like that. But you can imagine our founders also looked for opportunity so that something can happen. They needed an event to polarize people. When 9/11 happened, we came together as a country. Everyone, no matter what you thought about things, you all came together. The point being, we're seeing all of this craziness go on, and this is, who is going to step up to help us? Now, we could say, are our Republicans? Where are they now to come out and let's talk about great America? They're leaving Trump on his own. This whole thing is orchestrated, and this moment, when we see 9/11 and we all came together, how wonderful that was. Well, in our revolution, when we happened, we had the Tea Party. And that event brought everyone together. In Boston, when they shot those people in that square, that brought everyone together. It gave you an impetus that we're not taking this anymore. It built up to that point of we're going to react, and then it took off. Well, this is what we're seeing right now. Who is going to step in and stop this, Kathy? You know, as much as we like some of the things our Republican friends have done, are they standing up for America? Are they coming out saying this has to end? They won't say a word because if you say anything about the rioting and the looting, you're a racist. And they don't want to be because they want their job. They could care less that you and I can't go to New York and the people of New York have to suffer. In all the neighborhoods of New York, the good and decent people are suffering through this. This is not right. This is inappropriate. And there's no way out of it. And that makes us feel helpless. Now someone has to step in and be very strong. Now you get a strong leader that steps in, quells the violence, tells you everyone's out of work, nobody has money, we're going to take care of it. This is how these things are going. They're not pitchforks in the street. They're organized opportunities to come forward with a different plan that people, when they feel desperate, scared, and alone, they will cling to. Yeah, okay, let's go with that guy. Your point is right. It's not Joe Biden, but we're not electing Joe Biden to be president. We're electing his vice president, whoever he picks.
And whoever they pick.
Whoever
I don't know
they
if
pick.
He's capable of picking. I saw
a meme the other day that said, I can't wait to see who I pick for vice president. But the reality is, as crazy and funny as this is, that's what's going on behind the scenes. That's what you're seeing. That is the danger of this. It's really problematic.
And I think we used to feel we were safe because of the police. But the police are even made impotent at this time. They're not allowed to function as police. And if they are allowed, I think they're afraid to do it. I just have these scenes that I've watched. Cops going past people being hurt and different things. They don't want to get involved.
That's the Ferguson effect. They call it the Ferguson effect.
What is that?
Well, that was in Ferguson, Ferguson, Missouri, when the gentle giant charged the cop, tried to take his gun, and he shot him. And, you know, hands up, don't shoot. And he had all these people saying he was surrendering, and the cop just murdered him. They just shot him down. Well, the reason that officer wasn't indicted is because there was a lot of people, including a lot of African-American people who were there who saw it, who came forward and told the truth and said, no, he was fighting with the cop. Everything the cop said is exactly what happened. That's why they didn't indict him. But the Ferguson effect is when officers now see, doesn't matter what you do, your political people will abandon you immediately, like we're seeing all across the country, defund the cops, shut down the cops. We're seeing that across the country. Officers in the street have to worry about, first of all, do I want to get indicted and go to prison for doing my job?
Or killed, actually. The first
killed.
Thought is
well, now
killed.
They're getting killed. Do I want to lose my pension? You know, I did 19 and a half years, and I fought with somebody who resisted arrest. And you know what? Everyone's against me. The mayor steps away from me, and I lose my pension. I go to jail for 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you. I will simply put on my uniform. I'll come to work every day. And if I have to do something, I will. But don't ask me for proactive anymore, because proactive is a recipe for losing your pension, dying, or going to jail. And that's what you're seeing. That also emboldens the criminal element, because they know the cops are not stopping them.
Right.
It's part of a bigger mess.
Didn't something happen in Seattle with the chief? Did she resign? Was that?
Chief Carmen Best has come out and said that she's resigning. She probably already has resigned. She sent an email to her officers letting everybody know she's resigning, because the town council, the city council, voted to cut 100 police officers from the department roles. Now, how are you going to be safer in a city that's burning and suffering every day by getting rid of more cops? The idea is, well, if there's less cops, then there's less opportunities for them to kill and beat innocent people who did nothing. That's the thinking, that if we get rid of the cops, then there's less chances people are going to get hurt.
And she didn't want to do that.
No, she didn't want to do it. The city council voted. It's a defund the police. We're going to get rid of 100 officers. 100. You get rid of 100 officers, you are putting your city at risk. And she realized it, and she couldn't stay. She had made a statement. I can't stay here now. I'm going to resign because of this. I'm going to resign because of this. So it's a strange point. We see, you know, in Chicago, I want to go back to that again, because something else, you see little pieces of the puzzle start to come out. And if you're paying attention, you're aware, you'll start to see where they're going to come up. We've heard about reparations for years now. It was something that's always been out there. And every once in a while, a politician will get up and you know, oh, we should have reparations. And we never have the discussion.
What's a reparation?
This is paying African Americans today for slavery that happened to their ancestors.
Oh.
So they want reparations. It might be paid for that. Because of what happened to me back then, my family, to my ancestors, I was put in a position where we could not advance like the rest of the country. It wasn't fair what happened to us, and therefore today's people are still suffering from the effects of that. Now, that is an argument that can be made. Now, whether it's true or not, that is something we'd have to talk about, but because it's politically incorrect to talk about, because we can't sit and actually pull the facts out, because any fact you have other than, yes, we have to do that, makes you a racist. But the reality is, as I'm looking at it, okay, is that a potentiality that what happened back then to the people who were enslaved and then they're released, now they have to go out into a world that saw them as slaves? And how are they going to then attain the American dream? I get the whole concept, but that's been going on for a long time. It's gaining momentum now. My point being is that I could see that reparations potentially back in 1865 when it happened. It wasn't unfair thing to people that you're slaves today, tomorrow you're free, get out, we don't want to talk to you, we have nothing for you, and people didn't like them. So I could see 1865, 1875, 1900, I could see maybe we do something for those people who actually were enslaved. It could have helped them at the time to move them forward. We didn't have the foresight to see that. It didn't happen. We can't make a decision. We have to think about the facts and think of it clearly. The problem is we can't think clearly. You're not allowed to have a conversation. So I saw something on social media that said, reparations, you're going to pay people today for something that didn't happen to them. And the people that are going to pay didn't do it to the people that it happened to years ago. How is that fair? Well, that's the other side of the argument. That's the, well, haven't you had all kinds of benefits all these years? That they're apples and oranges, but it's an argument. Long story short is that in Chicago, there's a woman there, Ariel Akins, from Black Lives Matter. She's an organizer, one of the organizers there. And they were asking her about the rioting and the looting and busting of the windows and all that. And she came out and said, hey, people are doing that because they need things. So they're getting stuff to feed their families. So she's justifying all this, saying, hey, we don't have stuff and we're going to take it now. That's one thing to say. The biggest thing she did say, she goes, this is actually reparations. This is what you owe us. Well, that's where the argument's going to get skewed. How does Brooks Brothers Suit Company, let's loot them, and that's reparations for what happened to your family 200 years ago?
But how do we know reparations are over? Like, when is it, okay, we've reached the reparation level now. Now you're equal. You got 30 Brooks Brothers suits. Now you're okay.
Right.
Now it's not going to happen again to Brooks Brothers because they gave their 30, I don't know.
And you're absolutely right. And that's the thing, because we can't have the conversation. we can't actually discuss it. We can't even decide if we should or shouldn't. Is it the right thing to do? Does it make any sense? I don't know. But the point is that now this Black Lives Matters leader is calling that looting reparations. Now you're going to hear that again and again and again. That's going to be mimicked around the country. When there's looting, it's reparations. And anyone who stands up to say it's not reparations, boom, you're going to get slammed. That's part of the problem. But I thought that was interesting that she would come out and say it's reparations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just a weird place that we're in.
It's another mole popping up. Like, it's another reason that they're giving us that we are going to be punished. It's another reason to change our country. It's another issue thrown at us at a time with all these other issues being thrown at us. We don't have shields to deflect all the stuff they're throwing at us.
Right.
And make sense of it.
And I'm gonna clarify that when you say it and I say it and we're thinking about it, you know, what are they throwing at us? It's not African Americans.
No.
What it is people who are using the movement to change the country. So this is just another argument to light that fire to get people more upset to say, hey, wait a minute, none of this works. We have to change everything. We have to go right down to the bottom of the foundation, rip it all out and start over. We have to redistribute the wealth. We have to have the government in charge of what's right and wrong. We have to punish those people historically who have been wrong. We have to rip down the statues and change the history. There was a state senator in Chicago came out the other day and said, we have to stop teaching history. The history that we're being taught is all fraudulent. We got to go back and change the curriculum of all the students. It's all part of a movement, of a march towards another place. And the biggest impediment to that change right now is Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
The man, the orange man who says bad things, who talks like a real person, who is not as sophisticated as previous presidents. He's the only thing standing between us and how much we're going to change. Now, the question I have, Kathy, is Trump gets reelected. That puts off all of this, but my prediction is it's going to be worse on November 4th when we wake up. If he's reelected, the powder keg is going to really explode. We really have to be prepared for that because that's going to set the left off completely, that they're put off for another 4 years. Who comes in 2024? Who replaces Donald Trump? Who shows up as the guy waving the American flag saying, no, we're all America. America's important. Let's stay together as a country. Who fights these forces off? Because it started with an idea. It built to pitchforks. It got to the point of a faux event, and now it's exploded in all of our cities. And people are fighting for their lives in these cities, and no one is stopping it. Who comes after Trump? That's the big question. That's the big question here on Chasing Justice this afternoon, and we'll be back for round three. Are you thinking? Do we got you thinking? You have to think. I can't tell you what to think. I just can give you some ideas. This is Lieutenant Joe. We'll be back in a minute.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right. My regular homage there to my friend McConaughey, because I really like when he says that. Welcome back to Chasing Justice, my friends. Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here with Kathleen Pangaro in this very special episode of Chasing Justice, where we're looking at the chaos, the crime, the danger, and the future as the winds change in America. That's really our theme today. You know, we covered, I think, a lot of that violent stuff. There are so many different opinions out there. We do need to think about it. When I ended the segment saying that, are you thinking? It's up to each and every one of us to decide, what are we going to do? Kathy asked a great question. What can I do? What can you do? Well, the first thing you could do is make sure you vote. Make sure you get your family and your friends out there. Make sure you know the facts. Don't argue with people over slogans. The orange man said this and he said that. talk about policy. Talk about that. Oh, try and figure out, you know, do people want, here's what I would say right off the bat, Kathy, do you want your taxes to go up or do you want your taxes to go down?
I want my taxes to go down, Joe. Okay.
Do you want the American military to be strong around the world to protect us and our allies, or do you want it to be weaker so we're not so offensive to everyone else? Who wants to kill us?
I want it to be strong, but I think if you asked a liberal that, they would always quantify.
Well, they would. Well, America's military is the evil in the world, and if it was smaller, then it's just like
the
cutting back
the
police.
The world would be safer, right.
The world would be safer because America wouldn't be provoking people. But what would you want?
I would want my military stronger. That's what I'm voting for.
Absolutely. Carry a big stick. Mm-hmm. I would say we have to have the biggest, most powerful, most dangerous military on the planet so that we can maintain peace around the world. Can you imagine if America wasn't here? If America wasn't here to stop the role of communism and socialism and the tyrants, which is, as I say all the time, the default position of humanity is to live under a tyrant. That's how humanity is built. You got a strong person, they make the rules, and everyone kowtowns to it because you don't want to get killed. You don't want to be put in a camp. America has been the one thing that has protected the world from that as best as it could. It's an inoculation to tyranny.
It is the hope of the poor, because the first time in the history of the world, poor people could own property. That's what changed the world. You got to own a piece and it was yours, and you got to do with it what you wanted. You could make a living from it. You could actually get a job and save money and buy something. You had opportunity. Well, that is going to be taken away. Who else is giving people opportunity? Now, they don't like capitalism. They want to take it away. It's not fair. They don't want America to have a big stick. You know why? Because they don't believe in America's morality. The first time in the history of the world, we have a morality where the individual person has value. And we look out for the individual person, for the most part. I'm not saying that there isn't problems with that. But, you know, we did end slavery because it mattered about the individual person. And there are things that our country has done based on moral views. But now we're afraid to have moral views. You can't be religious in this.
No, whose morality is it? That's what always say. Oh, it's your morals, not mine. So you can say protect the babies, but then you're telling someone what to do with their body. So that's not moral. Mm-hmm. Killing them is more moral than telling someone, no, you really shouldn't have an abortion. You can't do it. You know, so we're twisted in our thoughts.
Right.
All of this is coming to a head. It's we see it. And that's really what our theme is here. So one of the things that I saw recently, and we'll jump out of that for a second. The Russians have registered a vaccine now for COVID-19. Their doctors have come up with what they say is a legitimate vaccine to protect people from the COVID-19 virus. Kathy, would you take that
vaccine? Not a chance. I won't even take a vaccine anyway, but I will not take that.
Right.
Absolutely not.
So that's part of the situation we're looking at. The Russians have come up with one. And I'm sure the Chinese are going to come up with one because they're all trying to, you know, beat out America and get there fast. But I trust our EPA, our medical people here in America. If they came up and said, this vaccine is safe, I don't know that I would take it right away. But I would be more trusting in them than I would in our enemies, the Russians and the Chinese. Who knows what's in that thing? Maybe 2 years later, everyone gets pancreatic cancer because mm-hmm. they took this. Maybe that's part of the Oh, that's out of Joe Unc. Oh, Lieutenant Joe, that's crazy. You can't talk. No, we would put that past them. We would put that past anyone. Who knows what they would do? And they're not our friends. They're our enemies. And we lose sight of that. I would not take the vaccine from them.
It's also, who cares? Maybe they didn't test to see it. Maybe it wasn't orchestrated that we all got pancreatic cancer. But maybe there wasn't enough testing and they just put it out there.
Right.
I don't really understand, but I'm not going to take... You know, when they build a new roller coaster here at our local Six Flags...
Right.
When they build that new roller coaster, I'm not going on it that first year.
Right.
I'm not going to do things at first. Somebody wants to be a guinea pig, go ahead to me. I want to just say, I'm going to take my chances.
Right. Here, take this vaccine. And like you said, maybe there's no evil intent. Maybe they really think they have a vaccine. Their doctors are smart. They got brilliant doctors in both countries. Absolutely. Maybe this is the cure. But we'll know 5 years from now when the people that have taken it, they didn't grow a second arm, and they can scratch their back themselves. But I'm not willing to take that chance that they're doing something either purposely bad or because they skipped a step.
Right.
Look at all the chemicals that come out of things in China. The young people that are vaping, all right, let's just look at that. They're vaping, and they're out there vaping with marijuana, THC, and it comes from overseas. A lot of it comes from China. And the problem we have is that there's chemicals in that THC marijuana that is going to kill people.
It's going to have an effect.
It's killing people.
Right.
It absolutely is killing them already.
And we know from cigarettes. And why is it people don't want to smoke cigarettes anymore? Because they know that the chemicals in there cause life-altering effects. But we don't understand, or maybe the government's not telling us, just take the vaccine, shut everybody up, you'll all be fine.
Right. Can you trust any government now?
Can you trust anyone? No.
I can't trust anyone right now, Kathleen. People are hiding things. It's such a twisted place we find ourselves in.
I don't even feel like we can trust our religious leaders either.
No. And speaking of that, you know, the attack on religion is another one of the things you have to take off the list. You have to take off free speech. You have to get rid of free speech.
Who does?
People that want to take over the government and change us fundamentally. You have to stop our free speech, because free speech is the linchpin of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't stand on my roof and scream about something so that people hear me and join me in whatever it is, we got to get rid of the British government. If they can't hear me say that, if I've been silenced through threats, intimidation, or gulags, whatever it is, then you lose all your other freedoms, because freedom of speech is the essence of being able to say something. So they're trying, that's political correctness. That's what that is. That's trying to silence you.
That's part of the Communist Manifesto kind of
Absolutely.
Thing, or taking over a country.
To shut you up. First thing you do is control what people can say, because then you can control. What are they trying to say now? They want to go after what people think. It's not enough to say, okay, you haven't said the words, but we know what you think. Now they're coming after your think, so your thought. And if maybe you thought that or you didn't, you can think anything you want, good, bad, or indifferent. The reality is, once that starts to happen, now they're going to accuse you. Well, didn't you one time go to a Tea Party rally? We've declared that to be a racist, anti-American thing, and you went there. I know what you were thinking. Well, that's the slippery slope of tyranny, and that's what we're trying to overcome. Religion is another one of those cornerstones. If you can take religion out of people's lives, that there's a higher authority, that there's something more important than the state, something that tells you right from wrong. If you can get rid of that, and all you have left is the state, then the state can tell you what's right and wrong, what you can say, and what you can think. And is there attack? Do you see an attack on the church anywhere?
Oh, all the churches? Everywhere. And I see sometimes it's our religious leaders that you're going, what are you people thinking? I want to separate the leader from the message. You know what I mean? So my religion isn't just about this one man kooky thing that he just said or that he's doing. You know, he doesn't really represent me.
Right.
I'm thinking about the Archbishop, the one in Washington. He was the one when Trump went over to the John Paul II Center.
Right.
Wilton Gregory, I think it is. Well, that man does not represent all Catholics. He actually, so Archbishop Vigano, right? You all heard of him. He's actually in hiding now because of his turning in McCarrick, right? And getting, so the Catholic Church has definitely been infiltrated. But Vigano, he said about this Wilton Gregory, he said there are false shepherds. He called him a false shepherd. All right, so now you know that there's even a division in the churches. You can see it in all religions, for sure, that it's even coming into our churches.
Well, a church is an organization like any other, and its frailty, when you look for frailty in anything, you look for the person, people. People are the weak link in just about anything. Now, you have someone who is, you know, they say about Pope Francis, people say, oh, he's a socialist because of where he came from and what he used to believe in. So therefore, he's going to guide the church and think socialism is okay. Well, people argue, no, he doesn't. He's not really doing that. But one man can make a difference. So what you're talking about is this internal strife within the church. But people on the outside who want to get rid of religion, they look at that and they say, oh, here's another example. What about the priests that do bad things? So therefore, the whole church is bad.
Religion is bad.
The religion is bad because it covers that. Your point is to take the man away from the religion. God and the word of God is pure and perfect. Man, when they interpret it, when they say it, when they live it, we're all weak. We do the wrong thing. And they're trying to take the acts of a person and apply that to the religion. And that's inappropriate.
Now, they just did something with Jerry Falwell Jr. or something, right?
Wasn't
there something?
Jerry Falwell Jr. was the leader of Liberty University.
Which has a great reputation.
Absolutely a great reputation. His father, Jerry Falwell Sr., was very well respected, spoke to presidents, counseled people all around the world, is considered a great religious leader, and his son was filling that void. Well, recently, unfortunately, Jerry Jr. has had to step down from his leadership position at the university because apparently he posted a picture, or someone posted a picture of him and some woman on a boat, and apparently their pants were unbuckled, which, you know, the obviously, the thought there, the inference there, is that these two are engaging in sexual activity. Now, when our friends on the left engage in crazy sexual activity, cheat on their wives, have interns in the White House, all of that, that's considered, oh, what a fantastic, that's so cool, that person is so hip and cool, what a great lifestyle. When the right does it, when someone on the right falls prey to human activity, evil or whatever, they do a bad thing, that is an opportunity to take that example and hit all religion over the head. And I'm afraid that that's what we're going to see here now. Look at Jerry Falwell, who supported Trump. So Trump must support a guy who does this, because we know Trump likes to cheat on his wife, the big orange man. They're going to turn it into this horrible argument instead of Jerry Falwell fell prey to being a human. He did something
wrong. We don't even know.
We don't even know what he did.
Right.
He could have just been, maybe had a bathing suit on underneath there, and they were taking them off to go, who knows?
Right.
But the thing is, immediately, he got to go.
So we have the outside attacking religion, and then we have within religions having issues. You see divisions all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, I wanted to talk about this, and I guess it's the time now. What can we do? What can we as ordinary citizens do? I don't know if there's a Tea Party now that used to happen. I don't have any idea, but I do realize that I feel powerless. So I did hear from these Catholic priests that they were having something called a 54-day novena. Now, that's a special kind of prayer that the Catholics do. A novena is praying a certain prayer for 9 days, right? That comes from when Jesus ascended into heaven and before Pentecost. It was 9 days. And they say that the apostles were praying for those 9 days. And then the Holy Spirit came. So the Catholic Church does these things, novena. 54 days is a period of time, a very special thing. So I heard that, and they're praying that for our country. So our country will be at peace. Because no matter what happens at this election, there's going to be craziness, no matter who wins. And they're praying it for our president. And I said, that's great. What if all religions did their own type of prayer for our president, if we joined in force for our president and for this country? And that made that, we know prayer can change wars. I remember when, Joe, you and I, our daughter was born very ill, and we knew that when I was pregnant, and we spent a long time at the hospital. There's a lot going on, and we had some faithful friends back home. I belonged to this interdenominational Bible study, and all of these people were praying for us. There must have been 100 people there, plus our church. It was wonderful, but I could feel the prayer. When I was doing things I never thought I could do, somehow all of a sudden I was able to manage. I wasn't falling apart. We got through that terrible time, and I know it was the force of prayer. So it dawned on me, let's call America out. Let's call them out and say, we may not have our pitchforks, we may not have whatever, but I know God destined this country to be here, to be a beacon of light for the period of time it is, and evil is coming up against it. It is the last stand. You know, what is the saying they have? When America sneezes, the rest of the world gets a cold or the flu or mm-hmm. something. We have an impact. We have that ripple effect impact, what happens here. I feel like demonic forces, I don't know what it is, are just slamming down like a tidal wave on us, on our country. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot we can do. We have little feeble umbrellas. We can't really fight back against this. It's a spiritual warfare is how I feel. But What if we all did that? What if we all took our time to say our prayers, maybe a period of time? Maybe you have a prayer. Archbishop Vigano, I brought him up before, he wrote a prayer for President Trump.
Yes.
And he prayed for him, and he prayed for our country, because he knows that this is a spiritual battle. And he said that in there. We have to look to our leaders, the ones that are true, the ones that are faithful. And we have to go to them, and we have to listen, and we have to join together. We can. It doesn't matter what religion we are, right? We can all say this. And I think that that's really an important thing I want people to consider. So the Catholics are doing this from August 15th to October 7th. It's a very special period of time. I'm certainly going to keep going up until the election. But what if we all did that, you know?
Right. I think that's a great idea, because the power of prayer, you know, a lot of our audience out there are real believers from all different kind of religions. And, you know, I have a faith in my God. I believe it. I know you do. And lots of people do. But that's a great idea. It doesn't matter what faith you're from. We're all Americans, right? One of the things, we have freedom of religion. And one of the things Kathy is saying is that prayer can make a difference in the world. I believe it can make a difference in the world. So praying for our president, praying for our country can only help us, because we are in for some difficult times.
And I want to say, if you had, you know, when we had our baby so sick, there's nothing you can do. I can remember the night before her surgery saying, you know, God, there is absolutely nothing I can do. This is all in your hands, right? I just had to pray and pray and pray. Sometimes that's all you can do. We have to pray for this country like it's our baby dying, because it is. It is dying. This country, the way we knew it, the way our founding fathers made it, it's dying. And we have to fight back. And I think the first way we can really do it is a commitment to prayer. Not just a, yes, God, please take our country. Let's make a commitment. Let's show God we are invested in saving this country.
Kathy, it's a very good idea. I think it can only help our country. And you're right. Looking at it as when people feel helpless, we were talking before about being helpless. What can I do? Well, here's something you can do. If you are a person of faith and you believe in God and you believe God is real, then one of the things you can do, you can make a difference by praying. Pray for our president, pray for our country, pray for everybody in it, that we all find peace, that we find some way to get along, that we find some way to go forward together, healthy, happy, and doing the right things. Because if we don't, we have no choice but to go downhill from here into the default position of humanity. And that's not going to be pretty. So listen, Kathy, thank you for being here today. I appreciate it. All our Chasing Justice family out there, remember, at Pangaro Global is our Twitter, at Pangaro Global. Send me a hit. Say, hey, how are you? And we will see you next time here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.